Good evening, everybody. Tonight is, I just went blank, July 3rd, and this is 2015. This is the Metaphysical Hour, and I am Julia Cannon, and I'm here with Shonda. Would you like me to say your whole name? You want to be known as Shonda. Okay, you can say hello.
Hello.
We're very informal here, and everybody will get to know your voice, and because that's what radio is. It's voices. Right. Yes.
Voices.
And as everybody knows, we have the conference coming up, the Transformational Conference. And it's coming up in just a couple of weeks, July 17th to the 19th. We're all very excited about it.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And right before that, we have a couple of classes. Hi. So we'll be going over there for that beforehand. We have our level 3 and level 2 and the reunion, the practitioner reunion coming up right before that, and then the conference. And our guest tonight, well, I guess I'll give out, before we announce him, I'll give out the toll-free 800 number. It's an 888 number. I hate doing that, but it was like 800 number and it's an 888. So Anyway, but our call-in number, how about that? Our call-in number, if you have any questions for our guest tonight, and we're really excited to have him, and that number is 888-627-6008, 1-888-627-6008. And our guest tonight is Garnet Schulhauser, and let's see. Gosh, you've been with us a few years now, Garnet, I think. And we've got two books, and I think you've got another one under contract, I believe, now. But Dancing on a Stamp and Dancing Forever with Spirit. And I think we just signed another one. Am I correct?
Yes, we signed the contract for my third book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss, about a month or so ago. It's supposed to be out sometime in 2016.
Yeah. So that's so exciting. So welcome aboard. And welcome
to
the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Julia. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we're so excited to have you at the conference again.
Well, yeah, I'm very excited about that, too. My first conference was 2 years ago in 2013. When I talked about my first book, and now I'm here again, and I'm just really looking forward to it. I'll get to meet all of both you two and all the other Ozark Mountain authors and speakers, and it's really a fun time, and it'll be a great weekend.
Well, and I remember everybody just loved your talk 2 years ago, and they loved, you know, just they really loved you. I heard more compliments about your talk. I wanted to pass that on to you.
Well, thank you very much, and I was happy to do it. And I heard from a lot of the people after my talk, and I got some of the same feedback. And I was very mm-hmm. thrilled to meet a lot of the people. It's so nice to be in a room with 500 like-minded people who are spiritually aware and who can really sign on to the things that I was talking about. So it was a great experience.
That's the truth. That's what we say. The Transformation Conference is fantastic. I mean, the energy there is just amazing. And that's what it's about. It's a like-minded people.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it is something that, for any of your listeners who are listening to us now, if you can make it, I'd certainly recommend to go, not because I'm speaking there, but there's so many other amazing speakers, and the people there just have, as Julia says, an amazing energy, and they're very much like-minded, spiritually aware people, and it's just a great place to mingle with people who think along the same lines as you do. So I'd certainly recommend it to everyone.
Right. So thank you so much for that plug. Anyway, so but let's get back onto you. So let's go back onto your background, because, you know, really, if we look back at you, you're probably one of the least likely people that you would ever think would be into this kind of work, really.
Oh, you're absolutely true. I mean, I was I spent 34 years practicing corporate law in Calgary, and I was very much of a straight-laced, button-down lawyer, you know, the typical guy wearing a navy pinstripe suit and looking very much like a stuffed shirt kind of a lawyer. that's the way I was. And I never talked about spirituality or religion or anything else. And I was very much sort of nose to the grindstone, you know, eye to the business of being a lawyer. And so it was very amazing for so many of my former clients and colleagues when I made my transformation to being the spiritually aware person I am now. It was just like a night and day sort of transformation for them. So it was really very much of a big change.
So what
particularly, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, that's what I was going to say. So what happened that made it all, you know, what that started everything and got you into everything?
Well, it was just by chance. It was a very much a surprise to me. I was still practicing law. This was in 2007. And I decided to stroll down the street one sunny afternoon in May. And then all of a sudden, seemingly out of nowhere, a homeless man just jumped in front of me and stopped me in my tracks. And he looked very much like a typical homeless man. He had long, stringy hair and a scraggly beard and dirty slept-in clothes. And my usual practice when I encountered homeless people on the street was to do a quick sidestep and go around. But this guy was different because I was basically transfixed by the gaze from his amazing, dazzling blue eyes. And those eyes were penetrating deep within me. I felt like he was looking into the depths of my soul. And I felt like he knew everything about me, even though we had never met before. And at the same time, his eyes were sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that was just infusing my whole body with an amazing sense of peace and security. So I loved it. I just stood there like a deer caught in the headlights, and I could have stayed there forever. But eventually he broke the spell, and he said to me, "Why are you here?" And then he quickly disappeared into a nearby store. And when I finally collected my wits, I decided to go in there to try to find him. Well, I checked around the store. There was only one entrance and exit, and he hadn't come out, but he was nowhere in the store. So I went back out on the street, and I walked up and down trying to find him. But he had seemingly disappeared into thin air. He was nowhere to be seen. So the very next day, I came back to the same street at the same time, hoping to find this man, because I knew he was somebody very different, and I really had to explore who he was and why he had stopped me. So I walked up and down the street for 15 or 20 minutes, and when I was just about to lose hope, I spotted him sitting alone on the bench. So I walked up to him, and I said, "Who are you, and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you, and I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." Well, then my skeptical lawyer brain kicked in, and I said to him, "Why do you think you can help me? It looks like you can't even help yourself, because you've been sleeping on the street for weeks, and you smell like a dead fish." Well, he just gave me a big smile, and he said, "You know, looks can be deceiving, because you look like you're a successful lawyer with everything under control, but we both know that's just a facade." He said, "You can go back to your office and see if you can find your answers in all those emails waiting for you on your computer, or you can sit down and have a chat with me." So fortunately for me, my intuition then kicked in, and it told me, it was screaming at me, "You've got to stop and talk to this man, because you need to hear what he has to say." And so I said, "Okay, fine." I sat down on the bench beside him, and that began a dialogue that went on for, you know, off and on over the next several months. And I found out that his name was Albert, and he was actually one of my spirit guides in disguise. And he had come in that disguise to answer my questions and to enlist me as one of his messengers. And it was interesting because sometime later I found out that I was the only person who could actually see or feel him in the physical form. And so if anybody had been passing by that park bench that day, they would have seen me sitting alone by myself, because they wouldn't be able to see him. And so after the first three visits, he appeared to me in physical form as the homeless man. And then after that, he was just a voice in my head, and we communicated by telepathy. And so when I asked him, why did he show up the first few occasions as the homeless man, he said it was his way of easing me into the conversation, because if he had just started talking to me as a voice in my head, I probably would have thought I was losing my mind. So this was the way he could sort of ease me into it. I could relate to a physical person that was talking to me, And then when he started talking to me by telepathy, I recognized his voice. I knew who he was, and I was comfortable communicating in that way. So that was his way of getting my attention and starting off the dialogue. So it was a perfect way of doing it, because if he had just started talking to me telepathically, I likely would have thought I was suffering from schizophrenia or something. So anyway, it was a good way of easing me into the whole conversation.
Right, and then also by the helmless man, he was doing the other. He got you off your guard too, and I love the charades of, you know, like he said, you know, with his little play on words there. You know, we all have our disguises.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he knew. I mean, he's been my spirit guide since I was, you know, born, and so he knows everything about me. He knows everything I've said or done, and so he was acutely aware of me, and he knew that he had to come into my life in a sort of an appropriate way, or you know, I might have just dismissed him and not bothered to pay any attention to him. So he picked the disguise. I thought it was the perfect disguise, and it really got my attention. And so that's how we started the conversation. And of course, once I started talking to this man, I knew he was very special, and I recognized he was a wise and advanced soul. I was quite happy to do his bidding. And he told me early on that he came here not only to answer my questions, but he wanted me to write about his revelations so everyone else would have access to them. And so that's how I got into the process of writing a book, which surprised me initially, because I never ever dreamed of writing a book, and it was something not even on my radar screen. And when he told me at first, I was taken aback. But then, as you know, Julia, spirit can be very persistent. And so he gently persuaded me over a series of months that, yeah, writing a book was something I should do and I could do it. And he really encouraged me to do so. And so after trying to resist and dig my heels in at first, eventually I just gave up and said, okay, I'll write the manuscript. And I did, which led to my first book, Dancing on a Stamp.
Yes, yes, they can be very persistent. and when you dig in your heels, they...
they push even harder.
Yes.
Yeah, I've since learned that there's no point in resisting what Albert wants me to do. I just sort of say, okay, give me my marching orders, Albert, and I'll do your bidding. And that's what I've been doing for the last number of years. And he's been leading me on various adventures deliberately, to show me things that he wants me to write about in my books, and that's what I've been doing. And I actually, you know, the writing the first one is always the hardest, Julia. Yeah. And the second book the manuscript was a lot easier to write, and the third one even more so. So I just becoming more comfortable with writing, and so and actually quite enjoy it, even though I struggled a lot with the first manuscript, but now I really enjoy it, and I'm just waiting. Excuse me, Albert tells me that. He's going to be giving me my marching orders for my fourth book very soon, and I'm just sort of waiting for him to tell me where I'm going.
Well, that's super, and I heard a major message there for me in there, so I thank you very much for that. okay, well, talk about your second book here. I really am intrigued about what you were – I mean, the first one was all about – the basics and everything, and then their second one is really interesting where it's going.
Yeah, well, the second book arose after I had not heard from Albert for a period of time. When I finished my first manuscript, and he kind of went AWOL for a while, and then he came back into my life in a very surprising manner, because it was much different than sort of the first set of encounters. And how it arose, Julia, was that I woke in my bed one night. And I can see this ghost-like ethereal figure standing in the doorway of my bedroom. And when it moved closer, I could see it was my old friend Albert in his homeless man disguise, but in astral form. And so I was surprised, because he had never appeared to me in this way before or in this manner. And so I said, you know, hi, Albert, you know, what brings you here this time? And he said, I'm going to take you on a series of out-of-body adventures to take you to the spirit side to meet some people, take you to other parts of the universe to see some different civilizations and to see different parts of Earth where there's a message for you and for all of humanity. And he said, I'm doing that because I believe that a picture is worth 1,000 words. So rather than tell you what I want you to write about. I want you to see it for yourself so that you can describe it and write about it in your book. And so I was a bit surprised, and I'd never done this before. And I said, well, you know, Albert, do I have to tell my wife where I'm going? And do I need a passport? And he just smiled and said, no, you don't, because you'll be back in your physical body before morning, and your wife will never know you've been gone. So then he literally reached out and grabbed my hand and pulled my astral body out of my physical body. And I turned around and I looked back, and there my physical body was still lying asleep in bed beside my wife and my little dog. And so then he said, come with me. So he just led me, took me by the hand, and we rose up through the ceiling, up through the clouds, and we hovered at a point high above our beautiful planet. And that was a scene to see, because it was an amazing picture from that altitude. And our beautiful planet looked like a jeweled pendant hanging in the inky blackness of space. It was really quite an amazing scene. Mm-hmm. I wished every human on Earth could see Earth from that vantage point. And I think if they did, they would treat our planet with more respect. In any event, he didn't let me linger there very long. And he said, come on, we're going to the spirit side. So he led me through a shimmering doorway. And as we passed through, I found myself standing in a beautiful meadow. And it was the most beautiful meadow I've ever seen, Julia. It was lush green grass and tall, majestic trees and wildflowers resplendent in a thousand different colors. And the perfume wafting up from these flowers was so amazing. It was almost intoxicating. It was the most pleasant fragrance I'd ever had occasion to smell. So we walked through the pathway in this amazing meadow, up a small hill. And at the top, I could see a group of souls, a group of people waiting on the other side. And as we walked down the hill, as I got closer, my heart skipped a beat because I recognized who was in this group. It was my mother, my father, my brother, my grandparents, and various aunts and uncles who had already passed over from the earth plane. And then I noticed my little dog, Oscar, who had passed away 10 years before, running towards me with his little tail wagging his whole body. So it was just an amazing reunion. But I had a couple of misgivings, because I was concerned about what my mother would say to me, because she was a very religious Roman Catholic person when she lived on Earth. And I knew that I hadn't been kind to the Catholic Church in my first book, Dancing on a Stamp. And I was concerned about what she might think. Well, she allayed my fears, and I breathed a sigh of relief, because she gave me a big hug, and she said, everything is okay. She said, if I was still living on Earth, I would be very unhappy with you about what you wrote about the church. But now that I'm on the spirit side, I can see the whole picture, and I agree with what you wrote in your book. So that was a great sense of relief. And so, and you know how it is with mothers, you know, when you think that mm-hmm. you're crossing them, you sort of have some concerns. Anyway, she allayed all my fears, and so I thought, great, everything's okay. And what I did was just fine with her. So warm hugs all around with my relatives, and Albert pulled me away and said, you know, you can come back and visit with them some other time, but we have business to attend to. And he led me away towards a gleaming white city in the distance, a place he called Aglaia. And so we headed towards that city, went through the main entrance portal, and started strolling down the main boulevard. And that was a sight to behold, because the streets were swarming with souls dressed in many colorful garments from many different eras and time periods and countries on Earth. And I felt like I'd been dropped into the middle of a costume ball. It was very colorful, very exciting, and all the people were smiling and laughing and chatting with great animation. It was a wonderful scene. They were obviously very happy and very well looked after. And Albert explained to me, he said that souls on the spirit side can appear in whatever form they want to other souls. And he said they will often choose to wear garments that they enjoyed living in one of their previous lifetimes on Earth. Hence the diversity of clothing and garments and colors and textures and styles and so on. So it was really quite amazing. But Albert said if a soul chooses to not appear in an earthly form, they can just appear as a ball of light. and however they appear, they can change it whenever they want, and they can appear to be male at 1 second and female at another time, and they change it frequently. He said, but souls on the spirit side do not have a gender. They're just souls. They're beings of energy. And he said that no matter how a soul will choose to appear to others, they're always instantly recognizable because they all have a unique energy signature. So that was quite an amazing sort of my first event in a city on the spirit side. And then Albert led me towards a beautiful white building with gleaming light white pillars lining the front. He called this place the Hall of Wisdom. And inside we entered a large circular chamber with a high dome ceiling. And in the center of this room, there was a horseshoe-shaped table, and there were 11 souls seated behind it. And they all had snow-white hair, smooth, unblemished skin, and they were wearing gold robes with white sashes. And Albert explained to me that this was the Council of Wise Ones, and it was their job. These were very wise and advanced souls, and it was their job to oversee all the incarnations on Earth. And so the chair of this council, her name was Sophia, welcomed me and said, thanks for coming, because they had a message to give to me that I should take back to all humanity, a very important message. And I can go on with the message if you like, Julia.
Oh, I would love you to.
Anyway, she said, you know, humans are at a very crucial point in their development. She said that we have developed very advanced technology, but our emotional and spiritual intelligence has not kept up. And as a result of that, we all too often let our negative emotions run our lives. Negative emotions like fear and anger and hate and greed. And that often leads to violence and conflict. And she said that we have to be careful that we don't let these things get out of control, because we have weapons of mass destruction that can destroy all life on our planet if we unleash them without being careful. And that could result in our civilization being destroyed, just like some of the other human societies in our history, like Atlantis and Lemuria. And so they were concerned that we did not get ourselves into that same fix. And so she said, what we need to do is we need to discard our negative emotions and fully embrace love and compassion, so that we can raise our vibrations and expand our consciousness. And we need to do this before we crash and burn like some of the other societies. So she wanted me to take that message back to humans, and she said that they had asked me to become one of their messengers, and that they had enlisted Albert to take me on some astral adventures to show me things that I could write about and hopefully encourage my fellow humans back on Earth to adhere to their message and to try to turn things around before it was too late. So that was a very important message that she wanted me to take back, and I wrote about that in my second book, and also about my subsequent astral adventures.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a huge, huge message.
And then, we said goodbye, and Albert said, "Okay, come on, we're off to see some creatures on a different planet." So he took me out of the city and out of the spirit side, and we went to a planet called Proteus, which is a water planet, which is looks a lot like Earth, but it's covered entirely by oceans. There's no land masses. So we dropped down through the clouds and beneath the clear blue waters, and the sea life and plant life under their oceans look much like the sea life under Earth's oceans. They look very familiar. And I recall seeing a lot of this stuff from my snorkeling adventures in the Caribbean. So it looked very similar. And so Albert then led me towards a large coral reef. And standing in front of this coral reef were a humpback whale and a dolphin. They looked exactly like the creatures that we have on Earth. And so we communicated by telepathy. And they told me that they look so familiar to me, and the life under the oceans of Proteus looks so familiar, because most of the sea life that we have on Earth was originally seeded from life on Proteus a long time ago. And they told me that they keep in telepathic contact with the whales and dolphins on Earth. Even though it's over a vast distance, they had no trouble communicating with them. And they told me that they didn't like what they heard from their cousins on Earth. And they asked me to take a message back to my fellow humans to ask them to stop abusing the dolphins and whales on Earth because their cousins were highly intelligent creatures with feelings and emotions just like humans. And they wanted to live in harmony with all the other creatures on our planet. And they couldn't understand why humans continued to abuse them without any justification, you know, hunting and trapping and capturing them for sea life parks and all the other things that we do to those animals. And so their cousins on Earth were very upset, and they had communicated this message to the people, to their cousins on Proteus, and they gave me the message that I should try to stop this abuse on Earth. And I agreed to do that, agreed to take that message back to them. So that was a real eye-opener. And ever since that, when I see whales and dolphins, on TV, or if I happen to see them on a whale watching cruise, I look at them in a much different light now, because they are really way more intelligent than we give them credit for. Even though they don't have any technology, but they don't have need for technology. They're very much in tune with their environment, with their planet, and with each other. And their only problem that they have right now is with humans. They can live very much in harmony with the other creatures on our planet, but humans are the big problem. So they wanted that message to get across to our fellow humans, and hopefully people out there will listen. And, you know, I know we've curtailed a lot of the abuse we've heaped on them over the last few years, but we're getting better at it, but we still are not completely in the clean, and we still abuse too many of them. And so we really need to turn that around and recognize them for what they are. So, very powerful message from these intelligent cetaceans.
Absolutely. I want to give you a little confirmation here. In some of Mom's sessions that she did, you know, people would go to all kinds of places, and many times they would go to water planets, and they never would give a name, because they didn't, a lot of times they didn't have names. They just didn't come up with names. If they would go to water planets, and they would be dolphins, and they would be things like that. And so that's exactly what they said, is that, you know, that's, they were dolphins, and they were things like that, and that's what they were. And they said that that's where our dolphins came from, were these other planets. So I can, that's exactly what you're saying, that the dolphins here came from these other planets. And and I was getting all the confirmation chills when you were saying that, you know, that what you were saying is absolute truth. And they absolutely do talk to each other.
So. Yeah, absolutely, it's great that you're actually giving me confirmation of what I saw with Albert by saying that, and it's good to know that other people are getting the same message. And I guess it shouldn't be surprising, because the message from Spirit comes through many different channels.
Yes.
And the core of the message is always the same. There's different nuances to it depending on the person receiving it, and but basically the core message is always the same. And mm-hmm. The messages have been coming, you know, through many different channels, through your mom and through her clients, and coming through to me through Albert. And there's lots of other channels all around the world who are getting the message. And I think that the Sophia told me that the pace of messages has really picked up in the last few years, because they think that we're at a crucial point, and we really need to have get some guidance to take the next step, to be encouraged to take the next step up the spiritual ladder, so that we can start to treat our planet and its creatures in a better fashion, with dignity and respect. And by doing so, we can also raise our vibrations and move on up the spiritual ladder. So it's really encouraging to hear. When I hear other people confirm what I've heard from Albert, it's really encouraging to me, Julia.
Absolutely. And that's why so many times people were taken to lives where they were shown that they were animals, or they were plants, or they were these things, so they could see that, you know, how important it is to treat these things with respect, you know, that we were these things. It's not a thing, first of all. It's where it's all energy. We were them, you know, it's us. And, you know, it's not just an it. It's a being, and so
a thinking, feeling, being with a soul, yes, just like us, exactly. Absolutely. And we just, humans all too often tend to treat animals as just being dumb animals that are there to be used or abused by humans. But that's really far from the truth. It's very wrong, and we need to sort of get our heads turned around so we can recognize these creatures for what they are. And then just to speaking about animals and some of the abuse we do, after Proteus, Albert took me back to Earth, and he said, yeah, I wanted to show you some of the things that are going on at Earth just to bring it home to you that there's still a lot of abuse going on. And so one of the stops was over the Pacific Ocean near Indonesia. And there I got to watch the operations of a shark finning boat. And that was horrible to see because the crew were hauling these sharks on board, dozens of them, one after the other. When they got on board, they cut off their fins with long knives. And then while the sharks were still alive, they tossed them overboard, where they'd be eaten by predators or they'd die a slow death by suffocation. It was horrible to see this. And Albert said there was only one reason for this abuse, and that was to provide shark fin soup to some of the select people in the world who could afford to buy it, because shark fin soup, as you know, is a delicacy in a lot of countries. And so to me, it was like nobody in the world needs to eat shark fin soup, and we don't need to do this to sharks. No. And it doesn't happen everywhere, but it happens all too often. And it was just another example of humans abusing the other creatures on our planet. And then he took me to hit home even further. He took me to Zimbabwe, where I was hovering above a field that was strewn with dozens of dead elephants. And I could see, and these elephants had been killed by poachers with cyanide poison. And I could see the poachers were cutting off the ivory with chainsaws and tossing it into the back of their trucks. And I knew it was horrible to see these majestic creatures decimated the way they were. And I knew that there was only one reason for it. It was to fuel the illegal trade in ivory. Mm-hmm. And that was used to make fancy trinkets for people who didn't know or didn't care where it came from. It was just awful. And then he just wanted to sort of continue. He was giving me all the bad news first before he got to the good news, Julia. Mm-hmm. And so then he took me to a factory town in the south of China. And there we sort of hovered above the factories, and the smoke billowing from the smokestacks was blackening the sky and choking the air. And he said, this is just one small example of the abuse that humans heap on our Mother Earth every day. We pollute her atmosphere, we pollute her rivers and oceans, and we pollute her soil. And he said, there's no excuse for it because our Mother Earth, that's the place where we live. And we should honor and respect our planet, but we haven't been very good about it. We're getting better than, 20 or 30 years ago at curtailing pollution, but we still have a ways to go. And then he said, to top it all off, that the human civilization on Earth is noted throughout our galaxy it stands out among other civilizations because we not only abuse our planet and the other creatures, but we also manage to abuse one another through violence and neglect. And he said that all too often, this has led to us killing each other through wars and conflicts over the years. And then sometimes we allow some of us to have excessive consumption while many others are dying from starvation and disease. And he said, we really need to turn this around, and we need to realize that we need to be better at sharing our resources and helping people who don't have all the fundamentals of life, like food to eat and clean drinking water. That was part of the message that he wanted me to write about in my book. And he basically ended up saying, because of this, everyone regards the human race as a triple threat, but in a very negative sense, a very, very bad sense. Hmm. So, at this stage, Julie, I was feeling quite grim about everything.
Sure.
And he said, I'm going to cheer you up. He said, I've shown you some of the bad things that go on. He said, but there are a lot of really good things that go on your planet. And he said that our perception of what happens in our world is too often colored by the emphasis that news media puts on negative events. And he said, there's a lot of good deeds and kind and compassionate actions going on our planet, but they rarely get reported just because they're deemed to be not newsworthy. So he said, there's a lot more good going on your planet, but we still have a long ways to go in terms of getting rid of all of our negative emotions and results of our negative emotions. So he said, you know, in the last while, we've made a lot of progress. He told me that in the 70s, I would not have written my books, and if I had, no one would have read them. Right. But now there are certainly a lot more people who are spiritually aware and who might have an interest in hearing the message from Albert, and so that was a very positive sign. We're getting closer to where we should be, but we still have a long ways to go. And he really said, we've already got to make an effort to encourage everyone to embrace love and compassion and stop the abuse of our planet and its creatures and our fellow humans. And ultimately, if we can do this, we can increase our vibrations with the ultimate goal of ascending to Earth in a higher dimension, which is where we should be heading. So that was good news. But, you know, I was still a bit skeptical because of all the bad things he'd shown me. And I said, you know, Albert, do you really think that humans can make the ascension before we end up destroying ourselves? And he said, oh, yes, we can. He said, because we are getting help from a lot of friends in high places. I didn't quite know what he meant by this, but then, in Albert's own way, he showed me by taking me to some place where I could actually view what was going on. And so the first planet he took me was near the center of the galaxy. It was a planet called Xeron, and it was a planet. The surface was barren of vegetation. It was nothing but just but smooth rocks. And he explained that their vegetation had been burned off years ago when their star became a red giant. And so we went down a tunnel and met with some very intelligent spider-like creatures who lived in underground cities. And these were very intelligent people, very intelligent creatures. And they showed me their activity. It was a large room full of a bunch of, it looked like computer monitors, and there was a lot of activity going on. And the leader that I met explained to me that their job was to monitor all the planets in the galaxy to find out which ones were capable of harboring life. And he said that, in fact, that's how Earth got its life, because they had discovered eons ago that Earth was capable of harboring life. And so they reported that to the Galactic Council. And the Galactic Council arranged to have other ET races that had faster-than-light spacecraft pick up life from some planets and transport it to Earth. And sort of that's how we got our life. And it started off with very simple organisms, and eventually they put in more complex organisms, including humans. And so they were very very much a part of the initial seeding of life on our planet. They were still watching what was going on, and they were, in fact, cheering us on because they hoped that their life experience or experiment on our planet would actually work out. And they were concerned, like everyone else, that we were at a stage where we could end up destroying everything, but they really hoped we would pull it off. So it was a very interesting conversation. You may be wondering, who is the Galactic Council? They explained to me that that's the council that oversees the seeding of life throughout our galaxy. And so they're, when they find a planet, or when these spider-like creatures find a planet that's capable of harboring life, that the council will then arrange to seed it with life from different planets, and they'll have various other advanced ET races do the transporting and then monitoring of life on these planets. So it was very fascinating. It was like very comforting to know that there are very advanced civilizations out there who are very benevolent and very much on our side and very much trying to help us, you know, take the next step up the spiritual ladder.
Absolutely. And you've heard, I mean, I'm only guessing that you heard a lot of Mom's materials, because I mean, it's like you're just saying almost word for word some of her material. I mean, some of the things that came out of her works. I mean, this is absolutely word that came out of her sessions. I'm not saying that this came from hers. The words that you're using, and it's really cool because it's like you've seen this firsthand. Now, she didn't ever say spider-like creatures, but a lot of the words that you're using, are almost word for word that would come out of her sessions.
Well, maybe Albert was channeling your mom through all these sessions. Hard to know. But anyway, I mean, as I said before, the message from Spirit comes through many different channels, and the core of the message is always the same. It doesn't matter who's doing the channeling, where it's coming from. In my experience, the message is always the same. So it's very confirmational to me, Julia, that your mother was getting the same thing through her clients, and it so just makes me feel like, okay, this really was for real, really did happen. And Albert wasn't leading me down the garden path. He was really showing me the way it really is out there, and the way of the way that our galaxy and the universe works. So it's very very validating for me, Julia.
Well, I think it's funny how even though, you know, all of us, we all get our information in different ways, and it's always nice when we get confirmation. It just helps. It's always nice when it just comes from different places, and it just does.
And you don't even ask for it.
Absolutely.
It just comes.
Right.
Yeah, I've had many people who've read my books, Julia, say that, you know, a lot of the things that Albert told me and I wrote about in my first book, they said a lot of those things I already sort of knew anyway and kind of believed, but they said it was really nice to have validation from someone else. And so that's just exactly what you're saying. You know, we all like to have validations. We can come up with a theory and have a belief in our own minds. It's really nice to know that other people think the same way. And so, you know, validation is really what it's all about. And I think that's why the message is coming through so many different channels, so we can all, you know, eventually get together and say, compare notes and say, yes, I think that that really has to be the true message, because it's coming through many different people.
Right, absolutely. Well, they told us, it's like, well, they have to have so many different ways, because there's so many people receive their information in different ways. So they have to do it in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. And anyway, to continue on, I mean, give me the good news.
Oh, yeah. We need some good news here.
We have friends in high places. He then took me to an orbiting spacecraft, an ET spacecraft orbiting Earth. And there I met with some gray humanoid beings. And of course, there's been lots of people who have met these gray humanoid beings. And so I met with them, and they told me that, you know, they've been involved with the seeding and monitoring of life since day one. And they've been helping us whenever they can with inspiration and technical know-how to help us make technological advances. And they plan to continue to do so. But, and you've heard this before, is that they are not allowed to directly interfere by destroying all of our weapons or stopping our violence. So they have to stand by and watch over the years as we've killed one another in wars and conflicts and genocide and so on. But it was really good to know that these are very intelligent, benevolent creatures, another race of them, different from the spider creatures, who are there trying their best to help us. And so that was very comforting. And then the ultimate light at the end of the tunnel was that Albert took me to visit Earth in a higher dimension, which a lot of people call the New Earth. And so he actually took me there, and I got to meet the descendants of a civilization that had originally lived on our old Earth eons ago in Central America. And they had managed to orchestrate a mass ascension up to the New Earth to escape from a barbarian army that was encroaching on their territory. And so I met with this group of people that were their descendants. It was just an amazing place. Like they lived in a world that was free from crime and negative emotions. They lived in harmony with their planet and with all of its other creatures. They didn't eat animal flesh. They consumed food that was made from plants, liquid food. And they had learned to shield themselves from disease and repair injured tissue, and to slow down the aging process so that they effectively lived for a couple or 300 years. They were free. They didn't have to work, and there was no money concerns or anything like that we have to deal with all the time. And they were free to pursue wisdom and knowledge and enjoy the peaceful splendor of their planet. So it was a very idyllic world, and it's some place that we should all aspire to achieve. And as Albert says, how do we get there? We have to raise our vibrations so that we can match our vibrations with the higher vibrations of the New Earth. And until we do that, we can't get there. And how we get there is by discarding our negative emotions and fully embracing love and compassion, which seems easy enough, but it's difficult for some of us to do it. And for a lot of people, they're not even aware of what they should be trying to do. And that's why Albert was enlisting me as a messenger and so many other people to try to get the message to everyone that, look, this is where we should be going, and we better do it before we end up destroying ourselves. So it was a great place to go to, a great target for all of us to have. And the job right now is for all of us, you know, for you, me, and everyone else who has radio shows and writes books, is to make everyone else aware of that this is where we should be going, and this is how we get there. So it sort of made me feel better to know that, yes, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Right, right. Well, you know, did they indicate that, I mean, what we were always indicated is like, you know, everybody will get there eventually, but, you know, a lot of people just don't want to go. Some people are, yeah, there's a lot of people that are just ignorant of it, and they don't care, you know, but then there's a lot of people that are aspiring to it, but they just don't know how to get there. So those are the ones that we're trying to reach.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I mean, I sort of know what we need to do, and you know what we need to do, but mm-hmm. trying to, you know, for myself, I mean, I try to control my negative emotions, and I've done a very good job since I met Albert with stifling these emotions, but they still flare up once in a while. I mean, it's just part of being human. So I'm trying my best to get there. I know that Albert says that, you know, eating animal flesh will slow down our increase in vibration rates. But I haven't quite gotten myself to the point of discarding that totally. But you know, you can still get there even if you do eat animal flesh. You just get there faster if you're a vegetarian. And he said, you know, you're right. Eventually, we'll all get there. Some of us will take a few more lifetimes on the old earth before we get there, but eventually we'll all get there, and it'll be just a wonderful place to be in. That is, unless we destroy ourselves beforehand. But Albert said he was very confident that we could actually make the next step, and that we would actually have most of us make the ascension before we destroyed ourselves. So that was his hope. That was his view of what would happen. But he said we really have to dig down and pursue that with firm determination. And those of us who are aware of where we should be going, we need to spread the message to other people, both by how we act and live, but by also telling them about it. And so that the people who just aren't aware of where we should be going can sort of think about it and focus on it and say, okay, I need to stifle my negative emotions. I need to control all my bad feelings and stop abusing other people and our planet and the other creatures and so on. And once we do that, we'll all eventually get there. It's just that it's not an easy road to go on. And it, you know, but frankly, it wasn't intended to be easy, Julia.
Right. No, it never was. But you know, like we were saying, some people love the drama world, and that's what so much of that negativity is about and everything. Some people just choose it, but I guess, you know, even them, I'm even seeing a big change in, you know, like they're even going, you know, they're getting tired of playing the game, and that's what it's really about, is just getting tired of it all.
Yeah, and I think that that's for sure that is happening, and I'm certainly can see that there's a lot more people who are spiritually aware and aware of what they need to do and where they should be going, and I think that's very encouraging. And one of the things that Albert said was that what we don't do often enough when we're interacting with other people, Julia, is thinking a bit before we act and speak, because all too often we can say things that would harm other people. Hurt their feelings when we don't really intend to do it, because we're just careless with our words. And to emphasize that, he actually took me on the spirit side to the Akashic Records, which, as you know, contain all the records of every life that's ever been lived in the universe. Mm-hmm. And he got let me see a preview of a couple segments of my current life, which is a preview of a life review, which is something that we all undergo after we cross over to the spirit side. So the neat thing about a life review is that, you know, we can watch our previous lives as though we're watching a 3D movie, or we can actually sort of jump back into our bodies and relive parts of it if we choose. And then the best thing is that we can actually get to hear the thoughts and feel the emotions of the people that we interact with, which is really a great learning tool, because all too often we can say things and not realize that we've really caused a lot of offense, a lot of hurt to the person receiving our words, and we just don't realize it. And then, so they hit this home to me. He actually showed me a segment, a couple segments from my life. One is that I was in the seventh grade, and the bell rang, and we all raced out into the schoolyard for recess, and we were heading towards the soccer field for a game of pickup soccer. And my chubby friend Adam, who I recall, you know, very clearly, was lagging behind because he couldn't run as fast. And so as I'm watching the segment, I can see myself. I turn around and I say to him, "Hurry up, Fatso, we don't have all day." Well, when I felt his feelings and his emotions, it was devastating because this poor guy was absolutely, I felt his shame and his anger because he felt that I was his friend and I had betrayed him. I'd embarrassed him in front of all the other kids. And he felt so badly that he just wanted to drop down into a gopher hole and never to be seen again. And it was really eye-opening for me because I just said that in jest. I was just a kid in the seventh grade. Right. I didn't think much about what I said, what my words meant. But when I'm watching this segment, it was like, okay, I really have to be careful from now on when I talk to other people because I have to think about how they will take it. And to avoid hurting other people, we have to just think carefully about what we say before we say it. So it was really a lesson brought home. And then just briefly, I'll tell you about another segment he showed me, which demonstrated, we were talking about animals before, which demonstrated that animals have thoughts and feelings just like humans. And it was a scene from when I was practicing law. And I came home one day, I totally ignored my little dog, Oscar, who had come running towards the garage door when I came in, hoping to get a friendly greeting or a pat on his head. He'd been waiting all day for me to return. And then he was devastated when I walked by him without saying a word, lost in thought. And I actually got to feel his emotions. And the poor little guy was absolutely devastated by my rejection. And he couldn't understand why I couldn't have given him a pat on the head to show him that I still loved him. And so he had to slink off, with his tail between his legs, off to his bed by the window. And he rested his little head on his paws. And if dogs could cry, there would have been tears rolling down his cheeks because he was really so upset. And as I'm watching this and I feel his emotions, it's like, oh, wow. I wished I hadn't done that. I wished I could redo it. And I had no idea that my little dog would feel this way just because I didn't greet him when I got home. So after that, I've always looked at animals differently, Julia. And I understand now that they do have feelings and emotions. They have souls, and that we really need to treat them all with dignity and respect. And in terms of animals having souls, I still recall the conversation I had that I described in my first book, where I asked Albert at one point, "Do animals have souls?" And he said to me, "You need only look into the eyes of your little dog to find your answer." And he was right. And so people need to look at look into the eyes of your dog and cat or your bunny or your snake or your whatever, and you'll find your answer. It's there. They really do have souls.
That's right. That's absolutely right. This has been wonderful, Garnet. Thank you so much. I have so many more questions for you, but we are about out of time. How can people reach you? How can they, like, you have a website, you have email. How's the best way for people to reach you and find out more about you?
Well, I do have a website, and it's garnetschulhauser.com. And that's hard to remember, but you can get to it by doing dancingonastamp.com and get you to the same webpage. And on my webpage, I have information on both of my books. You can download a free excerpt. You can watch a book video. At the very top of my page, I have the links to all my social media sites like Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google+. So you can follow me there. There are buy links on my book where you can dial into all the popular online stores and Ozark Mountain to buy my books. My email address is there in my website, and it's contact@garnetschulhauser.com. And I'd certainly love to hear comments or questions from your listeners, Julia.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. We were just talking about, we don't have any of your books on audiobooks yet, do we?
Yes, Dancing on a Stamp is on audiobook.
Okay, wonderful. I was thinking, okay, that's fantastic. We were thinking it should be if it's not. So, okay, super.
Yeah, both books are paperback and ebook, and Dancing on a Stamp is also audiobook.
Wonderful. That's fantastic. So, super cool. And then, you will be speaking on Friday. It looks like Friday afternoon. And
yes.
Come on, everybody. I mean, yeah, because I can think of so many more questions that I have for you. So,
Yeah,
this is, I mean, because look what you've seen firsthand. This is so fantastic. I just can't wait.
I feel very privileged that Albert has shown me these things, and very privileged that he's asked me to write about them. And I'm, as I said, very happy to write my books. I've written three now. I'm looking forward to writing the fourth one. And Albert says that I'm going to keep on writing until I'm a very old man. So away we go.
There you go. That's so fantastic. Oh, that's so wonderful. Well, how about a parting message? They're telling me you have a parting message.
Yeah, one of the things, I mean, a lot of what we've been talking about is very serious and troubling stuff. But one of the things Albert told me in one of our first conversations was, he said, look it, don't take life so seriously. You know, you're always going to end up back in the spirit side no matter what you do on earth, whether you make a lot of wrong turns or a lot of mistakes. But you're here for an adventure. You're here to learn and experience things. And that if you don't learn what you want to in this life and you make some wrong turns, you can always come back as often as you like. And so, you know, lighten up, enjoy the ride, and recognize it as a journey, a learning experience. And if you do that, you'll have a much happier journey.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's a wonderful note to leave on. And thank you again, Garnett. Truly enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me, Julia. I loved it too.
Thank you so much. And thank you, everyone. And we'll see you actually probably in a couple of weeks, because we'll be gone for the next 2 weeks with the classes and the conference. And then we'll be back. So have a wonderful time, and we'll see you soon. We love you.
See you in 2 weeks, Julia.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Garnett.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.